This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, the Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/stringchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/stringchicks. masterclass.com/stringchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Mary Chen.
Wait, can I say her bio, please? So every time we have someone on the podcast, we ask them for their bio, and this is what Mary said over her bio. They can just say, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Philly who went to grad school with them.
The reason this is so funny is because Mary is so accomplished and is one of the coolest people we know. But yes,
so yeah, humble.
So humble. Explain why I've been fangirling Mary Chen for the past decade now.
Oh my God.
It's been a decade. We've known
each other. We started grad school in 2011 11.
2012, yeah.
That's scary.
Holy shit. Oh, 12, okay.
Right? Okay.
Scary.
So, Mary, welcome to the show.
You guys, I'm so excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this and listening to your podcast, and I'm so excited for you guys. I'm proud of you guys.
And oh, thank you. And Mary, yeah. we just wanted to see you and hang out too.
Yeah. I know, right? Same. We got robbed of Psychotherapy Networker, so let's hang out here.
Plans last year to get all of our continuing eds at once,
and we did it in 2017.
We got this great hotel room together, the three of us. We're gonna fucking party.
That was so fun.
We're gonna have a slumber party
for week of, and got canceled.
Yep, that was some bullshit.
We were ready to go too. Yeah. Mary was like, "I don't think this is a good idea." We were like, "We really want to go though."
I mean, to be fair, I had like a trip to California planned that month that I was like, but I'm going to go to that. Right. I canceled it, but like,
we had no idea what was coming.
Yeah. We were just, oh God, just babes in the woods.
So
just
naive.
Okay. So, and one of the best therapists we have ever met, and also one of the best people. But you know what I'm going to bring up of why.
Of course. And I'm psyched that you will.
Which is that if you're listening and you grew up in the 90s, you most likely watched Degrassi. And Degrassi High was the epitome of my life. Paige Michaelchuk was who I wanted to be. It's who I related to. And Mary fucking Chen worked for Degrassi. What did you do for Degrassi?
I worked for the N, which was like the network that Degrassi was on. And so from 2002 to 11, so like they started in 2002. So I was like brought in at the beginning and like got to watch all those kids grow up. And I was working for like the website of the N. I was the Mary. I was like sort of a den mother on the website. And so we did like a podcast. I did a blog. I did so much blogging and so many interviews. And so over the course of like 9 years, like got to know those kids pretty well. They were all like genuinely great kids. Like that show was actually well run by non-sociopaths who weren't like, you know, ruining those kids' lives. Like right. it was a great scenario.
And then why would you ever decide to become a therapist after that?
You know what? That's a really good question. It was because I was doing like an advice column, like a collaborative advice column. Like I would have kids write in to answer a question and I would kind of collab collate their responses and like add my own like Aunt the Mary's like perspective, like from being older. And that was like one of my favorite parts of the job. And another of my favorite parts was like one-on-one connections with kids, like just through the like the messaging on the website. And when like, I mean, that job did roll for a really long time, but when it started to suck, I was like, you know, well, I mean, it's a long story. My career is like a long fucking story, but basically like there came this point where I was like, I can either keep doing what I know how to do or learn something new. I had like one last shot at doing what I knew how to do, which like involved working for Planned Parenthood at the national office. And like, I was just like, yeah, no, I don't want to do what I already know how to do anymore. Like I loved Planned Parenthood. They were a great organization, but like, it wasn't like, basically the reason my bio sucks is like, I just don't, I'm like, I don't want to do social media for a living anymore. Like I hate it so much. So I just wanted to be a therapist and have like real talk one-on-one with people all day long. And like, that's what I do. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And we got so lucky to have you in our grad school class.
We had a great cohort.
Oh my God. We really did. And Mary, remember we were in another interview together for a different school?
Totally. I'm glad we both ended up where we were.
Yes. It was fate.
Totally.
Okay, oh my God. The funny part is you do not work with children now.
Nope. I totally thought I was going to be like a therapist for teens. And like, I have like one or two teens now. Like, yeah.
Okay. So who do you work with? Tell us a little bit about what you do so people can get a good idea.
I do specialize a little bit in long-term single folk. And like, cause at the beginning I sort of started like in my bio, I just said like chronically single folk. And a lot of people like really resonated with that phrase and were like, what do you mean by that? And I want to talk about that. Cause I think I am that. And, so I do a lot of that, but I do a ton of couples therapy, a lot of like queer and trans, individuals and couples and non-monogamous, individuals and couples and or relationships. And, yeah, I just kind of, I focus on who finds me at this point. Like, you know, if they like me, I like them.
We were so happy that you offered to come on because not only do you have all these amazing skills, but you have such impressive lived experience of long-term singleness.
Yes, so very much so.
About that.
Yeah, one of the reasons I wanted to come on was to sort of like let out that sort of like my life has been what I think is a lot of single women's like boogeyman is like the person who like ages out of her fertility without meeting the person. And I was single until I was like 45. Mm-hmm. I'm in a relatively new relationship. It's like a year long. It's solid. It's pretty good, but like, who knows? But like everything I had to learn to get there was important to me, but so much of what I had to learn was to sort of get comfortable in the possibility that I would be single forever and find out like what would make that life good so that I could just live there. And then if I happened to partner, great. And I learned a lot through that process and I have a lot to share about it. So.
Well, and I'd like that you really talk about it, like as the boogeyman, right? Because like it's so often people come in and they're like, oh my God, like what if I'm going to be single and 40? It's like, what if
you're Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Right. And I think that part of it is like being able to look at that and say, okay, like you will get through that. You will work through that. And so to bring you on and have you tell your story, I think it's so important and it's going to help so many people.
And like the story I can tell is about meeting somebody in middle age, but there's another story that's just sort of like that where I didn't meet that person or I never met that person. And that's an okay path too. One of the things that like a lot of my single clients talk about is sort of that there's no like model for what it's going to look like for them. Like the only template they have is for like getting married, having a kid, like living life in that way. And so there's no sort of like, what do you do? Like, what are the financial considerations? What are the sort of like, what are the things you need? Like I said, to build a happy life and like, you know, like research is my love language. So like I've read like every book out there that I could find on the topic and like would love to be able to talk about some of that stuff. And the other thing I want to talk about with you guys is circumstantial infertility. Like I heard you guys talk about, like, I know you've been talking about infertility. You've been talking about childlessness and like, you know, childlessness by choice. And there's this other version of life where it's sort of like you kind of did want kids or you do want kids and you don't like, you don't want to do it alone or you've been trying to do it alone and it's not working. You know, it can be hard to get pregnant on your own. And like, how do you move forward if that thing doesn't happen for you, even though you wanted it? Mm-hmm. Which is, it's, you know, it's about grief. And I love that you guys talked about disenfranchised grief when you did your show on Emily's Miscarriage. So yeah, that's.
So let's talk. Okay, so let's start the conversation. I like what you're talking about, that like people only have one story, right? So we mm-hmm. have this where we are fed a lie, the myth of life, that you're gonna find the one. And like we've talked about this before, we both had this very stupid thing growing up that was like, I'm gonna be married by 30. Like, I don't know where that number
totally
came from.
I think it was like early, like by 25 or something.
25 when I was a kid. Yeah, totally.
Where the fuck we all got told that number, but this weird thing, which like, I don't get married when you're 25.
No.
But the thing is, like, numerically, that used to be the average thing, you know? So it's sort of like, that's the other thing to understand, is that things have changed and the numbers have changed, the statistics have changed, and the number of single people, like, I wrote down all my information to be able to pull it up, but it's sort of like the most coupled ages are like in the 30s and 40s, and that's like, there's still roughly a quarter of people are single. And when I say single, I mean like not in a relationship even, mm-hmm. not just not married. So it's like, there are single people around you all the time. And, you know, obviously at different ages, it's even higher than that. Right. So it's sort of like, it's a quarter of people. I think I've read somewhere and I couldn't find it, that sort of like 10% of people just kind of don't partner. And yet we don't have models for them. It's sort of like, we've had like a couple of sitcoms, but usually it's about sort of like finding the person. Nice. And the other thing is that, right, there are these different ways to be long-term single. One is sort of like where you are holding out hope and you're actively dating and you're trying to partner. And another where you are sort of like, I think this is fine with me. Like, I think I don't want a partner. And that like both of those are valid life experiences. Right. Like, you will have a narrative and it will be your life's journey. Like,
if you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received,
like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Well, and so I'm wondering also if you can speak to, because I feel like sometimes people then ebb and flow between those two things.
True.
Where people feel like they should know. I should mm-hmm. know if I want to be single forever, or I should know if I want to be mm-hmm. child-free. But then, like, I think there's a lot of people that feel really conflicted because, like, sometimes they're like, this would be a really nice thing to have a partner for, right? If I'm moving a couch, it would be really fucking easy if there was someone else here.
Yes.
Like, there's certain things like that where you
That's about it. That's it. Just those things, I think.
Those moments in that where you're like, you want to know why, like, this feels a little lonely. It would be nice to have someone to sit here, especially, I'm sure, during the pandemic.
There yeah.
That yep. we're like, man, is this really what I want? So can you speak to that a little bit? The
edge of- yeah, totally. Because I think this is a shared experience with a lot of people. So it's sort of like I moved in and out of like wanting to date and just sort of being like, maybe I don't want a relationship if it's not working out for me. Like if I can't make it work, then maybe it's because I really don't want it. And I think other times I really did sort of settle into that identity and feel sort of like, this is great. Like there are so many benefits to this. I love it. There are like stories out there about the single person that are just sort of like, it's just so sad and lonely. Like that's codified in the SCOTUS, like in the Supreme Court, gay marriage decision. He talks about sort of like, you know, oh, all the boy, like, we don't want to like doom gay people to a life of loneliness just because they can't like legally marry. And I was like, I don't know how many single people, you know, but like, they are not all as lonely as you think they are. They have very full lives. Bella DiPaolo does a lot of, she's sort of like a polemicist on singleness. And she writes a lot about, the socioeconomic like discrimination and disadvantages that you experience as a single person, the assumptions that people make about you. And one of them is that like you're sad and lonely. And the truth is that single people are like some of the most active in their communities. They're the ones who can be like relied on to be able to kind of like, you know, help out at the drop of a hat. They're very involved politically. Single women have like changed politics like several times over the course of, you know, America. And also that single women, it's like, that's a new thing. Like we didn't used to be allowed to be single and like financially independent and things like that. I don't know where I was going, but just sort of.
Yeah, it's so good. You
know, it's been great. We're along for the ride.
I think it's normal to like, you move in and out of that. And you know, and you meet somebody and you think maybe, oh, okay, I did meet somebody and then it doesn't work out. And you're like, okay, maybe, no, maybe I really am single forever. The thing that I found the most useful, there's this book by E.K. Trimberger, and it's called The New Single Woman. It came out in 2005. It's a deep cut. It's like out of print. Like, I, you know, you can buy it used. And what she did is like, I think 49 case studies of long-term single women to sort of figure out like what makes them tick and like what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And what she found was that like there were these six factors that make, you know, a life good for a new single woman. And I'm going to list them for you now. Like one is a home that nurtures her. And so that can be that you live alone or not. For myself, like I lined up like kind of a hybrid living situation where I bought a multi-unit house with good friends who live downstairs. And so it's like, because roofs and basements are like fucking expensive. Yes. And I didn't want to sit on my own anymore. And also like I could buy a nicer place if I could go in on them or go in on it with them. And so it's like I live alone, but also like have companionship. And now my partner lived in. So that's a different story. But like home situations can look all sorts of different ways and be satisfying. The second is satisfying work that's not her whole life, and that provides like economic autonomy and psychological identity. At some point, I want to talk about money and being single because that part fucking sucks. there's the third was sexual satisfaction, which may or may not include having partnered sex. And the author like didn't find a ton of sexual frustration in her sample. Like it's, I mean, this is women, right? And so it's like, it's
and
not
women
hard
often
to catch a D if you want to.
Using themselves, right? What
yes,
we know
that
is
true.
Women, especially in heterosexual relationships, are not having satisfying sex.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
A lot of women have great sex with themselves.
Orgasms mm-hmm. with themselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking this morning, I was like, I had like an epic masturbation life. Like it was very well considered. Like yes. I really know myself in that way. And I had the time to explore, the privacy to explore whenever the fuck I wanted. Yeah. It was great.
so much more time.
Well, yes, totally.
It brings up this other thing, especially if we're sitting here talking about cis women, mm-hmm. how we have been programmed and mm-hmm. socially constructed to serve others, right? So when you then have an experience of long-term singleton, what we're talking about is time for yourself, time
yeah.
sexually, or even your living situation, or even
yeah.
Jen and I were bitching today about how our husbands are the worst when it comes to decorating houses. I'm gonna decorate my house the exact way only I want.
Because also, when right. we decorate things together, it's like
perfect.
We're on.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's sort of like you find your people that do the like, and this is the case in a marriage too. Like your marriage can't fulfill every side of you. And so you find somebody who's like your vacation buddy who vacations exactly the same way as you to split that fucking expensive hotel room with, or, you know, you vacation alone and it's fucking expensive and that gets into the money part. But
well,
right.
This other part of like, you know, and I know we've talked about this before on the show, of the fact that we have made romantic relationships as the end all be all.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Like that's the goal. Well, and I think that's portrayed so much in the media. Like mm-hmm. I spent most of my high school watching Sex in the City. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much my entire, I would
I
just sit in my
Degrassi.
Room and watch Sex in the City while Emily was watching Degrassi. And the goal was constantly to like find a partner, right? Like
right.
it didn't matter what Mr. Big did.
She was still going.
She was still going
yeah.
for it.
Yeah, that was right. That was like in a, an attachment, like
totally. There's some sort of like anxious attachment there. Yeah, totally.
Had daddy issues.
Yes,
right.
But you could just assume.
They even mentioned, like, I forget which episode it was, but I think it was Miranda was just kind of like, can we talk about something other
yes.
than this right now? And that's one episode. Like,
yes.
however many seasons of that fucking
yes.
show.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, in it, I know we're getting into Sex in the City, but, like, I watched it so much. But, like, Samantha was an example of this, right? That, like, she, you know, she was kind of, like, the person who is, you know, not settling down, doing what felt right for her, and mm-hmm. then it wasn't necessarily the goal. And mm-hmm. so there was one example I think in there that was really positive, but I think that for the most part what was portrayed was like being in a relationship is the goal.
Yeah.
Well, and also that like even Samantha, it's sort of she's also kind of viewed as sort of like a narcissist and a slut and
right.
like there are all these stories that get put onto single people. When you were talking earlier about sort of, I'm sorry, I lost it. I've recently discovered that I have ADD and it's been life changing, but now I like notice it all the time.
Wait,
and it's
we should actually do
up.
A full
you should do
about like being neurodivergent
yeah.
and an adult woman
totally.
Diagnosed
yeah.
with ADD because people, I don't know if people know, but Jen and I both take Adderall and it's changed our entire lives.
I, yeah.
We need it.
I really want to listen to your episode about that because I think it'll be life-changing for me. There was something you were saying that brought up for me the stereotype that people have of single people as like really immature and that they're sort of they're childlike or that they're just like out there like, you know, just having mimosas at brunch with their friends and like, you know, their lives are so easy because marriage is work and they don't, you know, they don't have
like,
that work to
up.
Do.
Like, yeah, like we say this thing like get over, grow up.
Right.
Oh my God, right. And like the reality on the ground is that there's another book by Sarah Eckel that I love that's called It's Not You. But she talks about how realizing like she had to do and I had to do everything for myself. Nothing got done without me doing it. I had to figure out the mortgage. I had to figure out my taxes. I had to change the light bulb. I had to figure out how to move the couch or hire the people to like move the couch for me if I couldn't do it by myself, or arrange the friends to be able to help me out and feel really guilty about leaning on them. It did help eventually to sort of like figure out that I had a community of like other like long-term single people who kind of got it. And so we could like be on call for each other for that kind of stuff. But yeah, there's nothing more miserable than going to IKEA alone. Like nothing.
Or just going to IKEA.
Yeah. Fair.
I have like panic attacks in IKEA. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like a maze. Like I don't know what's going on. I get lost in there for hours.
So it's sort of amazing. It goes into like, here's all the stuff I have to develop to.
Right. I want to list the other three
because
they're important. So the fourth one is connection to the next generation. And so that can mean your own kids or not. And then intimacy, like emotional intimacy. And so that's friends and family and circles of care for when hard times hit, which I think is another thing that Samantha on Sex and the City went through, right? Like she had her, was it a cancer scare?
Yeah.
And I think that is like, that's the big fear, right? When you're single is it's sort of like when the shit really hits the fan, you know, I'm supposed to have a husband to take care of that. I realize I'm really talking about single women. I do think this applies to single men. They just have different challenges around it, especially around sort of like forming communities of emotional intimacy, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not enculturated for that. And that sucks for them. But they have different stereotypes about them also being immature, but also being like kind of creepy and pervy and like pathetic and all this stuff. Anyway, the sixth thing is community, and that's like school, work, church, politics, like, you know, the places where you find belonging. I also find that a lot of long-term single people, they have like really deeply robust friendships that are, you know, like where you go through hard shit the same way that you would in a romantic relationship. You go through fights and you repair them. And I think so many people who like haven't been in any long-term relationships fear that they're not capable of it, or that sort of like when they have their first one, if they have it too late, like they're going to be so far behind on like how to actually do a relationship. That was definitely a fear of mine. And then like, it turns out you do know how to go through a hard thing with a person. You do know how to resolve conflict with people. Maybe you don't, but like, that's something to learn either way. And right. I know plenty of people who are married who don't know how to resolve conflict.
Totally. Exactly. And you know, Mary, you were speaking to like a lot of the stereotypes, right? Like the immaturity. And can you talk a little bit about like, because, you know, find that like it's so easy to internalize that, right? To feel like, oh, this must mean I'm immature or I can't do this in some way. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, yeah, like a lot of my, so much of the struggle is receiving those messages and internalizing them and feeling like, I guess I really don't know what I'm doing. I guess I'm broken. And the thing that's the toughest that I love, that Sarah Eckel book, it's just like this little blue, very soothing book. I love it so much. And she just kind of talks about like all these mixed messages you get from people about sort of like, you're too desperate, you're too picky, like you're somehow too desperate and too picky at the same time. You're too independent. You're like all these stories that people are saying out of like the goodness of believing that you are worthy of love and worthy of a relationship. And so something must be wrong if you don't have one. But in the end, they just kind of end up like sending you all these messages about like all the shit you need to fix in yourself before you can be in a real relationship. And it's like you look at them and you're sort of like, you didn't fix that shit. And you
Right. And it's just so much blame on the person. Right. Like, and it also speaks to like that the end goal is that like, oh, you must want to be in a relationship and you're doing something wrong because I have it, you know, like if I, you don't have it here.
It can't be that hard.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
The other huge one is with your family of origin is that like, marriage or partnering is seen as it's like your life stage transition. And so like, if you don't do that, it's sort of like, they kind of continue to view you as a teenager and you're just sort of second class. Like the example I can give in my own family was, and this is the kind of thing where you said, like, I had internalized so many messages that it took me a long time to even like notice that stuff like this happened. Once I was able to name it, it was really helpful to be able to sort of separate myself from that and be like, I'm not going to let that in. But the example I have is like sitting at, you know, the dining room table, my cousin was visiting, and she had just gotten like a lake house, and she, like, I have an older sister, Beth, who has like two kids. And she was just like, oh yeah, tell Beth that like she and the girls can come to the lake house anytime they want and you can come with her. Like,
because clearly you can't drive yourself.
Like, yeah.
So nice.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank you so much. So, like, but that sort of, right. That like lake houses are for families, like not for single folks and the people that they view as important in their life, the people that they have as chosen family. Like, that's not, wow. You know, you can tag along. Yeah.
How did that feel for you at the time?
So what sucks is like, I didn't notice it in the moment. Right. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, totally. Like, I'll let Beth know. And then, I figured it out like a little afterwards, and I was able to say it to my parents once, and they heard me, and that felt really good. They were like, oh my God, I didn't even notice that. I was like, yeah, me neither. And like, FYI, that's been my whole life. Like, my whole adult life is like little things like that, just about me being sort of not there yet, like not a real person yet. And that was oh my God. Yeah. That was like a huge thing for me, especially in my early 30s, was sort of like, I'm tired of waiting for my life to begin. Like, you know, if I have to partner in order for my life to begin, then I better fucking partner. And then you go really whole hog on that. And then that doesn't work out. And then you're like, I guess my life just isn't beginning. But you have to kind of make a conscious choice for yourself that's sort of like, I'm just going to get comfortable where I am. And if things change, I will get comfortable where the new place is. But like,
well, you know. Just said something really important, which is you just said this thing of like, I'm not a real person yet.
Yeah.
How devaluing that is to our
world. Yeah.
Totally. Like, I will then become a person. I'll then become valid.
I'll become whole in some way. You know, people love to say that. Like, yes. You make me whole.
You make me whole. You complete me.
Yes.
And also, and like, oh my God, you guys, my fucking thoughts do not cooperate. It's, and I'm like nervous now. So
we have the same, listen, we have the same issue. I told Emily, I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning and I was like, I am not going to be functioning today.
Yeah.
You got to just talk and take over. So listen, that's why we're here, that we, then we'll just ramble.
Yeah.
I had that day on Tuesday so hardcore. That's, I was so like, worse. I don't think I work today. Like, I'm broken.
Not functioning.
Wait, there was something about sort of like, yeah, like I'm not real yet.
Not whole. You complete me.
Yeah. Shit.
Real person.
If it comes back to me, I'll try and remember.
Just interrupt us if it comes back.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
But it's time. Because we can think about that in terms of other stuff too, right? Once I lose the weight, once I have the
yes,
once I get the degree, right? It's not like this bullshit fucking ducks in a row magical thinking.
Yeah.
I am then a person once this happens. And so then what happens if there's no person?
Yeah.
Because that's a real fucking thing.
Yeah.
You can sit here and say, oh, it's the boogeyman. But also, some people won't find a partner.
And and what happens when you do lose the weight, when you do find a partner and you still don't feel like a person?
Totally. Which I think is, yeah. And like, and when you do, you know, achieve the goal and you realize you're actually kind of grieving like your old self and you're like, but I was so miserable back there. Like, so I remember a client who, when, you know, was just so invested in like finding a partner and like so miserable about living alone in her like dinky little apartment. And then when she did partner and it was time to move out, she was like, my little apartment. Like, and when I bought this place, like it was, I was calling it my spinster nest. Like I was really nesting into that identity. And I was just like, this is my spinster nest. I'm going to make it exactly how I want it. And like when my partner moved in, like we both had to talk about sort of like, we're going to have to grieve like that living alone time. Like it was great. It's fucking awesome to live alone. It's just expensive. The only thing that sucks the most about being single.
Well, let's talk about money then, because I would love to hear you talk a little bit about money and being single, because last week's episode was about money.
Yeah. I haven't got a chance to listen yet, but
so this
is
actually great. So tell us a little bit of your thoughts on that.
It's just that it's, like, and this is another one where it's sort of like you're seen as like not a real person. And it's sort of like, you don't have as much money to throw around because you're doing every goddamn thing for yourself. So like, even if I think about it too long, I just get upset when I think about housing costs, right? And that like, I didn't want to like punish myself in some like tiny shitty apartment. I was like, I'm a successful person. Like I want to live in a nice place, but me living in a like okay place and paying for 100% of it versus somebody else who's like in a series of relationships that go nowhere, but where they're living with each other, like they get to pay half rent. Like, and housing costs are 20 to 30% of your, you know, of your income. I'm going to pull up another.
Yeah, we're ready. We're ready for it. We love the statistics.
Wait, let me find it. It's about like the accumulated wealth of like single people and how different it is, and it's from Bella DiPaolo. Oh my god,
it's okay, just talk. If you talk really slow,
then it'll
there's
that it, like somebody figured out that it costs like basically $1 million more over a lifetime. Insurance costs, all of your insurance is more expensive just because you're not married. And I remember this from when like our homeowner's insurance, when my downstairs neighbors did get married, our insurance company was like, make sure you call us when they get married because we'll be able to give you a big discount. And I was like, cool. Like they're the exact same people they were yesterday. We're as likely to like burn down as we were yesterday.
Yes.
Maybe even more likely.
Yeah. Shit. I thought I wrote it in my little notes and I didn't, but it was basically like, it's obscene. And the thing that I mostly wanted to point out is that like the socioeconomic differences and discrimination are like, as you can imagine, so much more pronounced for people of color, right? That it's like the accumulated wealth for single women was something like, you know, for single white women, it was like $41,000. And for single black women, it was like $600. And for single black men, it was like 7,000 or something, right? Wow. So that gives you like a, you know, and then they didn't even like, Asians weren't even in the sample. So I have like no idea. Like, right,
of course. Not even included.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's just like over the course of a lifetime, it just, it costs you a lot more and you are discriminated against at work, at in housing. It's legal for landlords to decide that they'd rather rent to like a couple than to like two roommates or even a single person. That's, you know, that's not considered discrimination. It's just like, it's just allowed.
Wow.
So yeah, you just, you end up, and just all of the, like all of the little, like, My partner makes like half of what I make and I still feel so much richer having him live here and split some of the costs with me. Like it's remarkable how different it is. And in a way that I don't want to feel like I'm rubbing it in the face of somebody who is still single, but I want to say it to like validate, like it is harder. The thing I wanted to hear the most from someone while I was going through it was like, I can see how hard it is just to do regular shit, like just to live at baseline for you. I see that it is a challenge, not something that makes your life easier.
Yes.
Because that was the message I was getting, was it sort of like, well, you know, your life is simple. And it's right. Like, no.
That's such a great point, right? Like of this unrealistic idea. And I think there's also part of it because a lot of times there's a fantasy of married people or especially of parents. Mm-hmm. Of like, God, what would it be like to like
just be by myself?
So we then create and fantasize like rose-colored glasses, this existence that we don't have.
Right.
It's so fucking minimizing for people that it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I think people pity single people for all the wrong reasons, like just assume that they're just like lonely and like don't have anyone to rely on, don't have anyone to talk to. It's like single people have like plenty of intimacy in their lives, but they don't have fucking money.
Right. That's really the challenge.
We can sit here and act like it doesn't, right? We're not
right.
The most important thing, but it makes a huge difference in your life.
Yeah.
If you have
financial
as opposed to not, that's it.
And it's even like the little privileges of like something, I mean, I think some people prefer it this way where it's sort of like nothing in the house changes unless I change it. But I remember when I finally like allowed myself to hire a house cleaner because I hate cleaning. And it was like a gift that I gave myself. I was sort of like, there's this line in another book, Rebecca Traister's All the Single Ladies, about sort of like letting the city be your spouse. And so I was just like, yeah, I'm going to like pay somebody to clean because I don't want to clean and I'm going to do it ethically and fairly. And there was one day where she cleaned out my tea strainer. And I didn't know. And I went the next morning to make my tea and my tea strainer was clean. Bitches, I cried. I cried actual tears. I was like, and it's like, she'd been cleaning things that, you know, she'd clean my floors and things like that. But there was something about like this unexpected act of kindness in my own home that blew my fucking mind. And I was like, oh, that's not awesome. Like that, you know, that's enough to, you know, to thrill me. That's some of the stuff that's missing. And a lot of single people create households to, you know, like with dear friends that mitigate for that. Right. Mm-hmm. I think, like that, the new single woman is good for sort of like showing like, here's 49 lives and how they did it that are working fine for them.
Well, I like that because, you know, we talk about this idea of the boogeyman, which I just love that you're using that term because it's true. We think about like, this is the scariest thing that could happen. Ending up alone. How many times have I heard people fucking say this?
Yeah.
And it's like, but like, is that?
Also,
is that really the scariest thing?
Right. Right.
So let's talk about like actual people and how the fuck they do this because their lives don't seem so goddamn scary.
Well, and I think talking about this too is really important for people who maybe are not in the best relationships and are afraid of being single, right? Like they're afraid of, okay, well, if I get out of this relationship, what will my life look like? That there's that boogeyman almost keeps people in relationships or in situations. Exactly.
Oh my God. That was my favorite thing. Bella DiPaolo did this research where she found that basically like, if you're going to go for, you know, basically happiness set point, same as weight set point, right? It's just sort of like, you'll have like little bumps in your happiness and otherwise you're basically like, you're going to be fine. That the sort of like hierarchy of like life satisfaction at the top are people who are happily coupled. Second are single people. Third are people in neutral relationships and fourth are people in bad relationships. Right. So it is like literally better to be single than to just like partner up and sort of be like, this is fine. Like you know, if your relationship
is
like nourishing. Yeah, totally.
That matters so much that we've been scared so much. I think from the patriarchy in a lot of ways that it is so much better to be in a relationship or marriage than be single.
Yeah.
And maybe in the past that was it, but is that true for you now? And I think the hard part is it's also like, we can't tell people that, right? Like it's up to you to determine
what's
right for you.
Right, and how unhappy you really are in that relationship and is it possible to improve it?
But what would it be like to imagine your life single? Not how to avoid this, but how would I live in it? How would I thrive in it?
Yeah. I think it's like to discharge the fear, right? So that you're not staying in a relationship out of fear, which gives you the ability and the permission to demand that your relationship actually nourish you, right? To like, to stand up for your needs, to assert your needs, so that, you know, it's not just like, and I think, you know, some of my, like, I had all of this imposter syndrome becoming a couples therapist who was like single. And one of the things I eventually realized that like one of my strengths was not fearing single life for my clients, right? Like it wasn't sort of like, oh my God, yeah, I have to figure out how to keep them together because otherwise they'll be miserable and sad. It's right. Just like they'll have another path. And if this relationship isn't higher than neutral, then like maybe they'd literally be better off single.
Yeah. We always say, no, it's, you know, we always say that to couples too, that like, it's not our job to keep you together.
No. Yeah.
It's our job to help you figure out what works for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a huge misconception about couples therapy is that, okay, yeah, we're going to help you stay together when that's not always the case. I mean, I would say for a portion of the time, we're helping people learn how to consciously uncouple.
Okay. Sometimes. Yeah.
I want to make sure we get to the circumstantial.
Yeah.
I feel like that's really important. I was hoping you would go into that a little more.
Yeah. So that term comes from Melanie Notkin. She wrote a book called Otherhood. And she has this whole business around being like an aunt and like being like the best aunt in the entire world. But she's the one who phrased it. And when I heard it, I was just like, oh my God, yes, that. Like, it's not that I didn't want kids. I would say I wasn't I never was baby crazy, right? But I had always imagined that I would have kids when it was clear that I was like, you know, starting to like get close to aging out of my fertility. I was like, okay, like I was able to maybe settle into that easier than somebody who actually was like baby crazy or had always imagined themselves as a mother in like a really intense way. So it might not have been as hard for me as it is for some people, but I think those are the people also who are going to seek out, like, how do I have a baby on my own? Which, by the way, is so much harder than people think it's going to be. And not just the parenting part, but actually like getting pregnant and, or like people are sort of like, well, if I haven't had one by 40, I'll adopt. And it's like, it's not that easy. Yeah. What, you know, especially toward the end of my fertility, right? Like toward my late 30s and early 40s, when it was really sort of like, I meet somebody this weekend and he wants to have kids and he's ready to go right now, or it's not happening. I really did have to grieve that possibility. And it's a very real grief. It was like, there's this term in I think like China called bare branches, and that's the idea of sort of like the child who like doesn't have a child. And like that terminology like really resonated with me as this sort of like sad, like, what is, you know, it's existential, right? What is the meaning of my life if I don't reproduce, if I'm not good enough to reproduce? So much identity shit for women, especially, so much identity is sort of like, what are women, you know, everybody talks about like motherhood as being like the pinnacle of what you can be as a woman. So like, what if I don't do that? And I know you guys talked about this in terms of childlessness, like the pathways that sort of like you have to go on where friends of yours are having kids and you're not, definitely stopped going to baby showers after a while. Like, yeah, was not fucking, yeah, putting myself through does. That. Not doing that anymore. I think like as it was sputtering out, like I did go through, there was a 2-month period where I was like, I think I want to do it alone. Like, I think I'm going to go for it. And like, and then I lost that. But another really good book, it's called, I think, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed. And it's like a series of essays on childlessness from all different perspectives, people who wanted them and didn't have them, people who felt ambivalent, and people who never wanted them. And there was a really reassuring essay in there from somebody who had been on all sides of that and really at some point was really desperately sad that she didn't have the children that she for a time wanted. And like now she's looking back on that and she's kind of like, yeah, I felt that way. Like, I don't feel that way. So that was reassuring to hear. And I can say the same is true for me, right? It's not that I'm sort of like child-free by choice and like, you know, oh, I never wanted kids. It's like, I wanted them. That didn't happen for me. my fucking dental hygienist could not take that for an answer and just like ask question after question after question. Oh my like, God. But you could still, but you can adopt. And like, oh, this shit is just like, just well, let it be, just let me be childless. Oh my God.
Other thing I think they still, and oh wait, here's like a good example. So one of Jen's, at Jen's wedding, I sat next to one of Jen's other best friends. And we were just talking and I had said, oh, are you dating anyone? Cause I had met this previous partner of Earth. And she's like, no. And I was like, that's fucking awesome. And she like looked at me and was like, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. She was like, everyone, when I say that I'm not dating, like tries to hook me up with someone.
Yep.
Or, oh, it'll happen eventually. So yeah. she was like, I've never had anyone just say to me like, cool.
Right. Tell me more about that. Yeah.
Because it's, well, it's, and it's the same.
People get so uncomfortable.
They do.
Including our dental hygienist.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Right. Like people don't know what to say. Automatically assume that you're upset about it. Right. Mm-hmm. Or they assume that it's, you know, and, but also even if it is something you're upset about, like that's personal, right? Like,
right.
You get to grieve that. You get to work through that in your way, but like, it's people really like insert themselves in those moments.
They really do. And I think you're right. It's out of discomfort. There's no like, they don't have like a phrase that they can just like drop in there. That's just sort of like, cool. Like they don't know how to do that. And there is also just such a story about like, you're not fulfilling, like there's no existential path for what it looks like to not follow the template that we have. You know, another thing that was helpful to me in like doing all the research that I did was realize sort of like there are cultures where that's not the template. Like it's not like some biological imperative that things have to look exactly like they look for us in our like pop culture. And that doesn't mean that like you're broken. It's just your circumstances and like what are you gonna make of them?
I really like what you said about, you know, like you can look back and say like that was a period of time where like, yeah, that was really sad and I was grieving.
Yeah.
And now I don't feel that anymore, you know, because I think that people
think they'll feel that forever.
Yeah. They think they're going to live in that grief and that regret and that struggle for the rest of time.
Totally. And I think maybe if I had wanted kids more, it would have been a longer grieving process. Like I have a friend who's single, who's trying to get pregnant alone and it's not working out so far. And that's going to be a longer grief process for her. Right. Like it was simpler for me, but also the pain was real. And then, you know, and then I met somebody who has grown kids and I'm sort of like, maybe I'll have grandkids. Like, that'll be fun. Like, that'd be a way to connect, you know, connect to the next generation. I have my nieces that I adore, my godchild, like, you know, connection to the next generation is important, is listed in that Tremberger book, but also is not the whole, like, it doesn't have to look a particular way.
Right. Like, it doesn't have to be a direct connection from like your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like when Jen looks at Millie and kind of thinks about her for 1 second.
I'm just hoping Millie will take care of me. Well, and I think I think that's a big piece too. And I think that maybe that's something we should touch on. Cause I think that's a big fear is like when I'm older, you know, similarly to not having a partner, like when the shit hits the fan, like when you get older, there's this kind of assumption that like, okay, I'm going to get older and my children are going to take care of me. Right. And so touching on that too, I think is important.
My dad is, I can tell, having a really hard time with that because like he's, you know, he's 91 now and like my sister and I like are so involved in his care. He keeps saying anytime the two of us are alone, sort of like, I don't know how I would do this without you guys. Like, and you know, them sort of realizing like I'm 46 now, like that's really not going to happen. I think he's really scared for me. I don't know what it's going to look like either. I know I have to save more money. I know I'll probably like invest in long-term care insurance in a way that like not everybody, well, maybe everybody should. The other thing though, I have another friend who's long-term single my age who, she's like a patient's rights lobbyist, right? So she works, anyway, she was kind of, we were talking about this one day and she was sort of like, the current system, like the boomers are going to break the current elder care system. It can't sustain. It's totally reliant on the unpaid labor of adult daughters. like, that's not going to work out long term. Yep. So she was basically like, Gen X is going to figure something else out and we'll do that. And it's probably going to be some, like, there's stuff in Denmark where it's just sort of these like multi-generational like co-housing facilities. And like, it's just, again, like a community of reciprocal care. And maybe that's what it'll look like. Maybe, you know, and yeah, and I need to save money is the.
Absolutely. And so it's like, you're processing it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing, but I like what you just talked about is like, should, even if you have children, should you
put that on them, right?
Yeah, totally.
Right.
I have totally. One daughter. Should I really be putting that on her?
Right.
Should I be thinking, right? Like,
can I put right. it on her?
You does love.
I think.
Does, hi, Jen.
I think you need to have a consensual relationship, you know.
Right, right. I'm going to ask her, say, Millie. I'm right. gonna bring you toys and
if you accept this toy, you are promising
to take care of me for the rest of time.
Good. Shake on it. Okay, good.
You're good. At 2 years old.
She's like, yep, I totally. Thought the Elsa doll was worth it.
Right. Right. Fair.
It's such an interesting thing to watch. Mary, I don't want to end this episode, but I think I have to, but I could talk to you forever.
Forever.
Let's, so then, you know.
I'll only end if you promise to come back.
Oh, of course I'll fucking come.
Okay, and also I really think this is going to be so helpful yeah. for so many people.
So, yeah. Okay, let's do it. Let's end it with, if you could talk to someone who maybe right now is single in their 40s and not necessarily by choice, so mm-hmm. in a stage of fear and frustration mm-hmm. and scarcity, what would you say to them?
I would say It is not a sign that you're broken and that it's impossible. It's not a sign that you don't deserve it. Oh my God. Oh God. I didn't get to tell you the professional cuddler story. We're like,
wait, we got to rewind. It's all right. We'll make it a longer. Just do it.
I did have attachment shit to work through. Like that was a factor in why I was single for so long. And one of the places I landed on that was like hiring a professional cuddler to come basically just like lie down on top of me while I cried my eyes out. And one of the things that came like out of me was just sort of like, just because I don't have it doesn't mean I don't deserve it. And like, that's the message I would want to give to that 40-year-old woman, is sort of like, not having it is not about not deserving it. It can be circumstantial. Maybe there's something to look into therapy, but even that doesn't mean you're broken. It means you're adjusted to a different context or to a different circumstance. You have protectors that are there to protect you from a circumstance that might not be present anymore. And so, also, like, it's possible, right, that you will meet someone in your 40s. Meeting someone in your 40s is the fucking bomb. Middle-aged romance is fucking fantastic. You're so clear on what you want. You're so, like, men at that age are just, like, so much better at communicating. Like, they know what they want to. All, like, nobody's fucking playing games anymore. Kamala met Doug at 46,
yeah,
right?
Amazing.
Like, so yeah, I would say, like, if you want partnership can happen. And if you don't want partnership, there are other ways to build your life that are going to be fine, and build your life in ways that are going to be fine anyway. And if the partner comes along, great. Like, the right partner will fit into that schema. Like, I built myself a life that was fine, and my partner does fit into it. So,
oh,
all right, fuck
Mary.
All right.
Oh my God.
Mary Chen, I'm sure there's no way you're taking new clients. Is that correct?
No, I'm not taking new clients. And I was like, why am, like, what should I market on the fucking podcast?
There's basically nothing to market. You can't take anyone if you try.
That's why my bio sucks. Like, but I do, like, I have a book in me, I think. And so, like, I would love to hear from long-term single women about sort of like what they want to hear, or people who feel like they just, like, there's that Monica and Jess podcast that was like one of the Dax Shepard offshoots, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, people who listen to that and are like, voice. That's me. Yeah. Yeah. I want to hear from them and hear like what they would want out of a book, and maybe I can figure out how to write it. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So well, it. Here's what we're going to do. Instead, you can't reach out to Mary. She's too damn busy.
She's too busy. She's people love her too much.
Yes. We're going to link all the amazing books that she talked
yes.
about today.
Yeah. I actually, I did redo my website so that I could have a blog on my website, so that, and I put a blog up about like my four favorite books.
Mary Chen.
And MaryChen.com and opened up like comments on that. And so like, would love to hear from people about what they're
MaryChen.com. Yeah. It's going to be all that information. We're going to link a book list as well. Mm-hmm. Mary, we love you.
We love you.
And love you guys so much.
Much.
I can't wait to hang out in person. I can't wait to go to a conference and have a slumber party.
Oh my God. I never thought I would be so excited for the Psychotherapy Network. <in my life. laughs> I cannot wait.
It's going to be goddamn delicious.
Hopefully even by next year, we'll be
Hopefully 2022.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If it related to you or anyone you think that might like it as well, send it over. You can always rate, review, and subscribe. And we'll still talk to you next week on Street Chicks.